It's time for Baseball Prospectus Radio, baseball's most popular independent podcast. Join Will Carroll, Brad Wakamirka, and the BP team as they break down what's happening around the game. Whether it's instant analysis of the day's events or an interview with one of baseball's most interesting people, this is your audio home for the type of content you can only find from Baseball Prospectus. Now, powered by baseball's best team of analysts, this is Baseball Prospectus Radio.
At the start of the baseball season, we often get a bunch of baseball books, and a lot of really good baseball books. But this year, we've had to wait a little bit. Honestly, the best baseball book I've read this year is Joe Posnanski's The Machine. And he joins us now. It's senior writer for SI, Joe Posnanski. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Well, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And, you know, I was lucky enough to read this book a couple weeks ago. I got the review copy, and it's phenomenal. Really, what brought you to this book?
Well, for me, you know, it was 1975. I was 8 years old, and that was really when I started falling in love with baseball. So I wanted to write a little bit about that time period, baseball of that time, and started just looking a little bit into that Reds team that was obviously so dominant and such a great team. And you know, the more I looked into it, the more I thought, boy, this could be kind of an interesting book. And then I started talking to people, and it was just one of those projects, you know, and you run across these as well, that the more you do, you know, the more you research it, the better it becomes. And at some point I realized, well, this really is a book, and it was just great. I mean, it was really a fun book to work on.
Now, I mean, it's almost as much a period piece as it is a baseball book. Did that surprise you how it came out?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think that coming into it with this notion of, you know, I wasn't necessarily writing, I wasn't, you know, a fan of that team necessarily or anything like that. Knowing that I was coming in writing about that, you know, that year and you know, baseball that time, I knew I was going to be interested in a lot of the external stuff. But, you know, as it turned out, that stuff was pretty cool. You know, I mean, that was the year Jaws came out, and it was, you know, Gerald Ford is president, and he's getting fired at every other day, there was so much neat stuff going around that team, and trying to put that team into context of the time, it was fun. I mean, that really was one of my favorite parts of doing the book.
What was the biggest surprise you had putting this together? I mean, this team is pretty well known, but, you know, nobody's ever gone this deep on them, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think for me, the biggest surprise, and it's something you never know what you're going to get, but to me the biggest surprise was Sparky Anderson. I think there was a guy that I think we all know, obviously. He's in the Hall of Fame. Remember him from the Tigers, remember him from the Reds. He was good. I mean, he really was good. And that was not something, you know, it's not like I came in thinking he wasn't a good manager. Of course, I knew he was good, but he was better than I thought. I mean, he was really ahead of his time when it came to the way he used the bullpen. He was terrific at the way he used the players individually. I mean, you know, one of my favorite things in the book is, you know, suddenly they're struggling and he sees his job's on the line, and he basically moves Pete Rose from left field to third base in the middle of the season. And you know, I've asked a couple of other people, try to imagine the best guy you know in baseball today. You know, if it's Derek Jeter or Albert Pujols, just ask them, think about the manager, ask him to move to a different position in the middle of the year. I mean, it's absurd. And yet he got Pete Rose to do it. And that was a big, big turning point for that season. So I think that was the biggest surprise to me, was just how good and how involved Sparky Anderson was.
Who was the – I mean, we all think of Joe Morgan or Pete Rose. And maybe we don't give Sparky Anderson enough credit. Who's the guy who is almost ignored now that was actually a big part of that team and bigger than we now realize?
Oh, I mean, I think there are a few guys, but the one that probably stands out is Tony Perez. And it's not like Tony Perez is ignored. He's in the Hall of Fame and people know him. But, you know, when you ask about things that surprise you, I didn't realize just what a leader on that team Tony Perez was. I mean, here you have Joe Morgan's probably the best player in baseball at the time. If he's not, Johnny Bench is. Pete Rose is certainly the most charismatic or whatever you want to call him. I mean, he was the guy that everybody looked to on that Reds team. But yet, when you were in that clubhouse, and this was unanimous, I mean, this was all the writers who covered that team, this was all the players who were on that team, every one of them that I talked to, they all talked about how Tony Perez was the guy that kept that team together. They all looked to him. He was the one the stars envied. I mean, he seemed to have this inner peace about him. And when they traded him at the end of after the 76 season, that really was the end of the Big Red Machine. And you wouldn't think that. I mean, because they had Dan Dreesen at the time who put up numbers pretty similar numbers to what Tony Perez had put up. But they were missing something, and something changed, a dynamic changed, and I think he was just a really, really big part of that team.
With all that leadership skill, did it surprise you that Tony Perez didn't last longer than he did as a manager?
He really got shoved out after 40 days, so I'm not even sure he got a fair shot. But, it's interesting to me, I mean, sort of the difference. When you're a player, as a leader, I mean, the fact that he was such a great player gave him a certain cachet, I think. I remember once when the Royals acquired Terry Pendleton, who I think a lot of people thought was this great leader when he was with the Braves and even with the Cardinals. He came to the Royals, and I remember going up to him and saying, do you feel like you can be a leader here? And he said, you can't be a leader if you're hitting 200. And that was, that's pretty much how it is. And I think, so being a manager is a lot different. I mean, I think, you have to gain your respect in a different way. And so I don't know, to be honest, how well Tony Perez would have done as a manager had he been given a fair shot. But I do know he wasn't given a fair shot.
Yeah, we're talking to Joe Posnanski, his new book, The Machine. About the Reds, that 1975 Cincinnati team is on shelves now or available wherever, though it's not available on Kindle, Joe, and I'm waving a finger at you over that.
No, I believe that's wrong. I believe it is available on Kindle.
Oh.
So it is Kindle ready. I'm a Kindle user myself, and so I already downloaded a copy. So it is Kindle available.
Well, I'm excited because I looked on Tuesday when it came out, and I said, no Kindle. I'll have to get on Joe about that. But
some weird Amazon thing, because if you go on the book, it says, it tells you not available, but if you actually just look it up under my name or under the name of the book, under Kindle, it's available. So they've got to get that together, those Amazon people.
Crazy Amazon people. Yeah. Actually, it's funny because I get these books as review copies, and I'm actually trying to convince people to send me either Kindle versions or PDFs, because I have all these books, and I'm a dedicated Kindle guy, and I'm like, I don't need all these paper books. I mean, it's nice because I end up donating them to the local library, but we're in the 21st century now.
It's changing. It's changing out there. There's no question about it. I was really actually very excited. I mean, I asked them very specifically. I said, will there be a Kindle available, version available? And they said, yeah, we actually think Kindle's going to do quite well. So it is Kindle available, so that's good to know.
Well, this is a nice transition because you're one of the writers that is both old school. You have that great position now at Sports Illustrated. You've been in the newspaper business for a while. And yet you're also one of the most popular bloggers, and you've taken advantage of that new format. How did that come about? What made you think, hey, I'll just start up a blog and write about all sorts of things and come up with my own formats?
Well, I wish I could tell you that it was some sort of well-thought-out plan, but it never is for me. I actually started the blog a couple years ago to sell my first book, the Soul of Baseball book about Buck O'Neill. I thought, you write a book, you need to promote it, I should promote it with a blog. And so I got a blog and started, trying to do the various, hey, this is where I'm going to be. Who's going to go to the blog to read that? I mean, nobody cares where I'm going to be. I don't care where I'm going to be. So I didn't know. So I thought, I'd like to get a few people looking at this blog maybe. So I just kind of started writing these goofy things that were just coming off the top of my head. And I found that I liked it. I liked doing it, and it was a different kind of writing for me, and a chance to to just sort of spread out and write as long as I wanted without any concerns, and write about whatever topic I wanted without really caring if anybody else was interested. And it just became this thing. And people started reading it and commenting it, and the commenting community kind of turned into its whole thing, and they kind of inspired me to write more stuff. And you know, it just kind of fed on each other. It's been fascinating to me to sort of see how that thing has grown, just because, you know, I certainly didn't come into it with any great sense of, you know, how to use the future or how to write about, but it just sort of very naturally came together, and now it's obviously a huge part of what I do.
How do you contrast what you do with the blog to what you do in print?
It's interesting. It seems like it's been kind of a natural divide. I mean, there are certain things that I decide I'm going to write. I mean, if I decide, hey, I'm going to write, but I'm going to break down a Snuggies commercial, I feel like that's a blog.
Your editors at SI don't want that kind of stuff?
It doesn't seem that way, you know. And if I'm going to go ahead and break down every Brian Bannister start, that's kind of a blog thing. But you know, it's really there isn't that much division. I mean, obviously for a blog, I do it, and you know, it's done more quickly. I'm trying to get it up faster and all of that, and it's just a more relaxed writing style. I'm not as concerned about the crafting it as I am, you know, crafting stuff that I do for the magazine or for the website or for a newspaper. So it's just different. It's more of a hobby type of thing. But the thing is that there isn't as much of a line as I once thought, because now a lot of times a blog post I'll write will actually appear on SI.com or appear, you know, in the Kansas City Star. So there's definitely, you know, I'm losing a little bit of that divide. But I think most of the time it comes out pretty naturally, which you know, this is a blog and this is a print item.
Did you ever have an editor at the Star or someone at SI say, why'd you write that on the blog? That would have been a good article, or vice versa?
Well, with SI, it's never been that case, because if they thought it was a good blog or, you know, it's a good article, they just would pick it up.
Yeah.
And they did that all the time. I think the people at the Star, I mean, I wrote, for instance, quite a bit about the Royals, and they linked to the blog from the Star. And so I wrote quite a bit about the Royals, but there's a pretty clear divide. I mean, you know, my blog posts tend to be overly long, and you know, there's no room to put 3,000 word blog posts about, you know, the Royals cleanup hitters in the paper. So I think that they sort of felt like they were getting the best of both worlds. You know, they're getting the stuff for the newspaper, and then the blog they could just link to and still get something out of that. There are times that I've thought that. There are times that I've written a blog post that I've thought, boy, you know, that could have actually, if I'd had more time to work on it, that might have been a pretty good magazine piece or a pretty long newspaper piece. But, you know, you can't get to everything.
Now, you've been awarded the best sports columnist in America twice, I think. Am I right with that?
Is it twice? You are right. You are right with
and
that.
And a number of other awards. I don't have time to list them all here. I found, you know, this was the first, I started out as an internet writer, so links have always been a thing for me, but I wrote a piece for the Football Outsiders book this year on rehabs, and I kept finding myself going, oh crap, this should be a link. This should be a link to a picture. This should be a link to something. Does the craft of writing suffer because we can take so many shortcuts with links?
I don't know. It's an interesting question, because I would almost view the other way. I mean, it seems to me like that there are possibilities that we have with the cursor, you know, when you're writing for the internet, that are just not there with print. I mean, print is obviously it's stagnant. It's there. You're getting exactly what you're getting. And there's so many possibilities with the internet and, you know, things like, that you can roll over a word, and you don't even have to go as a link, but you can roll over a word and it might lead, you know, show you a photo, or it might show you another, you know, something. I mean, there's just so many things you can do that I don't think we've explored, you know, a thousandth of it, you know, what you can do as a writer on the internet. So I think there's some very interesting possibilities where this thing is going and where the cursor is going. But that said, absolutely. I mean, I think there are plenty of times that, you know, some of the best writing, I think, is explaining what's going on. And I think it's a lot easier to just link to a Wikipedia site, you know, let them explain it rather than us explaining it. And, you know, so I think it's a little bit of both. But what I definitely think, and I think something that too many of us have missed, is this is different. You know, writing for the Internet is different than writing for print. And it's not different good, it's not different bad, it's different, and it's a whole new art to try to master. And you know, I think people should look at it as a challenge rather than thinking, oh, I'll just take whatever I used to do on print and just bring it over to the Internet. I mean, this is there are just more possibilities here.
Absolutely. We're talking to Joe Posnanski, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. His new book, The Machine, is out in stores now, or available at Amazon, and available for Kindle download. I did check that out while we were talking. You know, I don't even know how to craft this question, so I'm just going to say Kansas City Royals.
Ooh.
What? I mean, what do we say about them at this point? I don't even know what to do at this stage.
You know, it's been... Well, I've been in Kansas City now for, this is the 14th season that I've been in Kansas City, and I've seen a lot of things, you know, obviously, and not a whole lot of them are good, but I've seen a lot of things in 14 years. But what really, really strikes me now is we're now on a loop, because I'm now beginning to see the same things over and over and over again, and that's when I think it starts getting really frustrating. I mean, you know, it was one thing, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago when the Royals were telling us that Terrence Long should win a Gold Glove for playing left field. And now they're telling us David DeHacy should win a Gold Glove for playing left field. You know, it was 5 years ago, 6 years ago when they're telling us, you know, that the important thing for the Royals is first base defense. You know, and they go sign Doug Minkiewicz because really they think that the way to improve their team is to get a better defender at first base. And now they're saying the same thing. The problem that they have defensively is because they don't have a good defensive first baseman. I mean, these very basic points that are just so obviously have nothing to do with why they're failing continue to be like the headlines that they use. And so it is frustrating. And this has been, to me, this has been the worst season of them all because, you know, the division is terrible. They've got the best pitcher in baseball. You know, they came in with a pretty decent sized payroll, and they're terrible. I hope, and I don't get this sense at all, but I hope that they understand what a disaster this year has been. I mean, I get the sense that they sort of feel like, oh, if a couple of injuries hadn't happened, or if a couple of this, or no, this has just been an absolute catastrophe of a season, and they need to make changes and hard changes in order to get this thing turned around. And I don't get that feeling at all. I get the feeling that they think, we'll kind of stick with it, and the plan is going well, and let's just kind of keep going. And I think that's how you end up, you know, being really, really bad for 15 years.
Yeah, you can just see this. And, you know, the stuff that Randy Cesarelli has been talking about, and you and Rob Nyer, it's interesting to me because we always hear the phrase we always hear when a manager is fired is that he lost the clubhouse. Is there a point where the general manager loses the I don't know what the Royals Nation, as it were?
I think that you know, Dayton Moore came in, and I should say up front, I mean, I really like Dayton Moore, and I think he's a good baseball guy, and I liked when they hired him. I thought it was a great hire, and I like him very much personally. But all that said, you know, I think he came in with a tremendous, tremendous amount of goodwill. You know, he came in, nobody was really happy about the way things had gone under Allard Baird. You know, here was a guy coming in with a history, with a background. He was in Atlanta and they were so successful. And you know, everybody's like, hey, trust Dayton. You can trust him. He's going to get this thing done. And he came in, they got a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And I think everybody sort of felt like they were on track coming into this year. And then this year has been such a dreadful season in so many ways. I think it's, it is hard. I mean, I think if you're a Royals fan, I think it's awfully hard to look at what this team has done and said, okay, well, I think, you know, they're still on the right track. I mean, it's just been such a bad year. But yeah, I think you could easily lose the fan base.
Last thing for you, Joe, and I want to try to bring this full circle between the Royals and your book, The Machine, which, as I said, is available now at bookstores, Amazon, and on the Kindle. You know, one of the things I noticed in the book is that Pete Rose was he was really beloved in Cincinnati. Local boy made good, and he was really as much a character as he was a player. Obviously, we look at him a little bit differently now, but through the lens of 1975, he was this bigger-than-life character, despite his short stature. Today, one of your last articles at the Kansas City Star was about Disco Hayes, who's as much a character as he is a player, perhaps more. Is there room in baseball today for character, or are we going to see guys like Derek Jeter, who are essentially corporate? Great, but corporate. Is that the future of baseball?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, you know, you talk about Derek Jeter. I actually just finished a little piece that'll run in on SI.com tomorrow about Albert Pujols, who's very much the same way. I mean, I think, you know, is the job now as a great baseball player is to say as little as possible rather than being who you are and really letting people see you. And you know, the world has changed. The media has changed. We're a lot different. There's a lot more of us in some ways, a lot less of us in other ways, and you know it's difficult now. But you know, you think about Pete Rose, you think about Joe Morgan, you think about Johnny Bench of that time period, some of the pitchers as well. I mean, on that team, and then you look around. I mean, Reggie and Steve Garvey and some of the other guys in the mid-70s, late-70s, they were big stars, and they acted like big stars, and they were not afraid to be who they were. They were not afraid to say what they were going to say, and they didn't really worry too much about the fallout, and it was just a lot of fun, and you'd hate to lose that. You'd hate to lose that. I mean, there still are some characters in the game, and you mentioned Disco Hayes, and to me, there's a guy, why wouldn't you give that guy a shot? I mean, you're the Royals. You're going to lose 95 to 100 games anyway. This guy's pitched well in the minor leagues. He's a great guy. He's a guy that everybody's going to love. And you know, why wouldn't you, you know, at least try? I mean, the Royals had a guy like this. I mean, Dan Quisenberry was a guy who everybody looked at his stuff and they said, there's no way this guy's going to get anybody out. There's no way. The teammates looked at him when he came in for his first pitching session and they were like, this is a joke. I mean, this guy throws 67 miles an hour. There's no way. Of course, he turns out to be one of the greatest relief pitchers, you know, in baseball history. And in addition to that, he was a great, great character for the game. And isn't that what you want? I mean, wouldn't you at least try to see if these sorts of things will work? And I mean, I think we're now getting to the point, though, of something that really bugs me about baseball, which is people are afraid to try anything. I mean, I don't think it's just baseball. I think it's football. I think it's basketball, too.
Yeah.
People are afraid to try stuff. They're just too scared to try new things.
Yeah, four-man rotation. I mean, I was going to mention that, you know, can you imagine Pete Rose in Cincinnati today? Would he be more like Derek Jeter? Probably not. Or more like Chad Ochocinco, who's tweeting everything and thinks he's ESPN?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, I think that somebody with that strong a personality as Pete Rose, I don't think you quiet down. I don't think Derek Jeter, I think Derek Jeter isn't hiding anything. I think that's who he is. I mean, I think he's kind of a quiet, I mean, he's not quiet, you know, necessarily with his friends, but I mean, he's not going to be outspoken. He's not a guy that wants to create a lot of waves. You know, waves. Tiger Woods the same way. I mean, these guys, they want their privacy and they want and they don't want to be known. And you know what? That's their right. And it's okay as long as you know sports has some other people to sort of balance it. I mean, I think if you had nothing but Derek Jeter's and Tiger Woods's and Albert Pujols and guys like that who are great players but, you know, are not really, you know, all that interesting, I don't know how long that lasts. I don't know how long people go, boy, this is, you know, is this what people want, or do people want a nice mix of guys like that but guys who are also just great personalities? I think people want the mix.
I absolutely agree. That's Joe Posnanski. We got to give him a little time before his next interview to say hello to his daughter. But I do want to thank him for all the time, and I do want to encourage everybody to go and read The Machine. Joe, thanks again for the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Baseball Prospectus Radio. For more cutting-edge analysis, check out BP Online at baseballprospectus.com. This podcast is copyright Prospectus Entertainment Ventures. All rights reserved. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Baseball Prospectus Radio.
I feel ready to go another nine innings.
Holy cow!